My name's Valerie Sinerson, and I'm 76 and have been semi-retired in the last 6 years. And my work always used to be over disability and trauma. And because of working with children and adults with learning disability, who it turned out had been abused in far worse ways than any abuse I'd come across before outside of refugees, I slowly got interested and involved in trying to protect children and adults who were being involved in organized abuse rings. And tragically, despite the work that has been done in the last 20 years, despite the independent commission, we are still in an appalling state over organized abuse, VIP abuse, even though we now accept that there is a 1 in 4 conservative estimate over abuse in this country. And that to me is one of the most shocking factors of living in the UK, that a lucky Western country has got 1 in 4 people who've been abused. That's a conservative Department of Health figure, and that would cover 11 million people. So although the amount of poverty tragically is increasing at the moment, when we have racism and housing problems, we are still one of the luckier countries, but we share this awful history with all the others as well. That bringing up children without hurting them seems to take centuries to achieve.
Now, this word abuse can mean all sorts of things, can't it? Even the word sexual abuse can mean lots of different things. We also, the terminology of a paedophile, for example, really, some people say, well, it really only refers to adults that are sexually abusing children who are below the age of puberty. So can you just lay out some of the, if you want, the sort of the terms, in a non-jargonistic way? Because I think the words we use, often people just don't know what words to use and would rather probably use no words at all.
Quite agree with you, and in fact, I was using a word I don't agree with because the word abuse, when referred to children, it's really rape we're talking about. Somehow, we make words to do with children sound as if they're less serious. A victim of child abuse almost sounds as if it's a medical condition that needs diagnosis rather than a crime. So, when I'm talking about abuse, I should stick to my own methodology, which is referring to rape and physical assault on a young person.
Yeah, because we're now even told that smacking is abuse, whereas obviously there's a million miles between that and what we're talking about rape here.
Well, if you consider we're one of the very few civilized countries now that think that assaulting a child is a justifiable chastisement. So whilst the majority of parents that would still hit a child when worn out would happily stop if they were helped to, because most parents know they've not done anything that's helped, and if anything, it silences a child and makes them angrier later when they become an adult or a parent. We've known all the research for years, but somehow government is scared of losing votes, unlike what happened in Scandinavia, where government led. And in fact, we can just witness in America the level of grassroots violence from the acceptance of beating children with implements all the way through their school life as well. And it's part of the class system and the history of it, and abuse of physical punishment in public schools that then spread to state ones. So I think hitting children is something that we will pass through. It doesn't work. It's setting a model of violence and is not helpful.
Well, hang on, because look, Valerie, some parents will argue, well, actually, I think that an occasional smack is acceptable. Say, for example, if a child disobeys and runs across a road, or if a child is caught bullying another child, that sort of thing.
And if you are bullying a child for bullying, you're showing that being aggressive is all right when you're older and stronger. When you're frightened of what a child's doing and you do something without thinking and you regret it, but it's part of showing how frightened you were, a child will understand that, and so will the parent after. But if you get people to read Finkelhor's Violence Laboratories, the actual research done on corporal punishments has been significant for decades, but people are scared of giving up perhaps the last bit of power. So I think you're right that in another decade, we will have more people entering the categories of people that have been abused, where they've had parents that used especially implements on them, that would be seen as assault in the future. And one of the reasons why it is so hard to discuss is loyal to parents they love, and it's shaming and humiliating to be reminded of how they let you down at times. Where children are loved, they're going to grow up well, even if parents resort to hurting them at times, because the child will know they're loved. But of course, the biggest problem is where the child is not loved and has got a disturbed parent that is physically hurting them because they haven't been helped.
Now, Valerie, I know you were interviewed around the time of the exposure of the Jimmy Savile case, and it's amazing that it actually took quite a lot of effort, even after his death, because while Savile was alive, many of the broadcasters were afraid that they might be sued if they exposed him as a paedophile. But then even after he was dead, Liz McKean, who's a journalist I work with, she did interviews with some of his victims, and at Newsnight, her bosses said, well, we can't use those interviews even now because we're planning a Jimmy Savile special at Christmas, and so your interviews, I'm afraid, won't be aired. And so that, in a way, is a kind of double whammy for those victims of Savile who stood in front of a camera, spoke about their abuse, which is obviously having to relive a horrific, traumatic experience, and then to get a call or a visit from Liz, the journalist, to say, well, I'm sorry, my boss has said I can't use the interview. I mean, this is a hideously abusive process to put anybody through. What do you make of where we are at now with the abuse? I remember writing an article at the time, which was rather unconvinced that to whether this could never happen again, which is what we were being told at the time with Savile. Maybe you could say something about this whole thing of the ritual abuse, because I've seen certainly all the way through Private Eye since it was taken over by Ian Hislop from the previous people like Richard Ingrams that ran it originally. That they ridicule this whole idea of satanic ritual abuse completely. They say, well, anyone that even says it's happening is some sort of conspiracy nut.
Absolutely. And as someone that loved Private Eye from my teens onwards and saw them as libertarian, it was so disappointing to think there was a little enclave in this otherwise radical paper that had got this very strong view and was peddling it whenever they could. And it wasn't open to question. And it then made me worry about some of the news items that I thought they provided that were true. Could I trust what they were writing about anymore? Very disappointing. There were several important things you said there. Saying this will never happen again is such a dangerous sentence, because everything does happen again. And the NSPCC trying to say we're going to stop abuse forever, Well, abuse has gone on ever since there were people and will carry on probably until we've wiped ourselves out of the planet. What we slowly hope for is that there's more understanding of what leads to traumatic behavior being repeated. But it does happen again. And having a great big look at something that's in the news all the time gives people an illusion they've done the work. One, they only did it after he died. The terror of working with somebody that is part of the establishment is absolutely huge. And which is why VIP abuse of any kind is so difficult. It was Tebbit who really spoke very honestly when thinking about Cyril Smith and how police and all sorts of groups knew Cyril Smith was assaulting children sexually and physically. And yet there was this feeling that a disturbed child was dispensable against the reputation of government. And if we see the treatment that Tom Watson has had, or the treatment that the fantasist Nick has had, Carl Beach, where somebody who lied, and we don't know very much about his own trauma history, but in which a fantasist gets a longer prison sentence than a murderer because he named well-known people. And then suddenly all the press stop asking about him. And I think the same thing happens when someone has been found to be guilty after death, Jimmy Savile and Cyril Smith, and you see all the guilt by association and the level of turning a blind eye and the way the press get brave after the event, but then shut up any further exploration of it.
Well, yeah, that's really it is extremely worrying. But there are different forms of. Oh, I wonder if you could just talk about these satanic ritual abuse. I mean, it might be something that may happen not in a satanic context, but the idea apparently is to really traumatize the children into such a place as basically they're screaming, crying, and crying for mummy.
Right, and of course that exists, and people that want to frighten children have used fake belief systems, exaggerated aspects of them, in order to frighten children in all history and internationally. So that yes, sometimes if we don't meet the perpetrator, if we're just meeting the way they have imprinted their rules, their actions on their victims, we are not getting the whole picture. So I don't know, out of all the children and adults I've met who have said that they were victims of Satanist abuse, how many of those perpetrators, alleged perpetrators, really were Satanists, and how many have made rituals to frighten children. But if it's alive in the victim and is carried by them like a daily nightmare, that's the thing we're working with that we have to deal with.
So how, I mean, how does this affect children? I mean, there must be some, perverse motivation behind it. Maybe you can talk about that too, but how does it affect the kids?
Absolutely traumatized, that the children that I've met, sometimes they've been in foster care, have already been vulnerable, and are therefore more vulnerable to anybody frightening them. The children were having nightmares, they couldn't sleep. That anything that reminded them of imagery used in what they said they'd gone through terrified them. So that, for example, Halloween regalia that every shop can sell quite harmlessly, and that ordinary children can enjoy that frisson of fear, but a child that has been hurt in a context using those masks and horns and spiders, it isn't innocent fun. It's reminding them of the most frightening moments in their life.
Now, we've seen in Glastonbury recently this whole idea of adults through Easter and May Day and this kind of thing dressing up in animal costumes with horns and dancing. The parents I've spoken to don't feel that's appropriate for their small children to go to. And I'm just reminded of these descriptions of satanic abuse, Valerie, as to whether this is something which is maybe now coming out more into the open. I mean, the Glastonbury rituals in the past, May Day, etc., used to be like dancing around a maypole, the children dressing like flowers. Now it seems to have taken this kind of darker side.
And it does seem as if there's more freedom for different groups, different religious traditions, different customs to be explored and expressed. So it could mean there is a greater freedom, and that some groups that felt they'd be laughed at or that they'd be seen as illegitimate now feel they can show what their traditions are, if you like. That could be a good side of it. But if something is happening where ordinary children are being frightened by it, then there isn't an adequate boundary or over what is enjoyable for children to join in and what isn't. And it could be that some groups that are abusive are looking to gain further involvement from the public.
Where do you think it's all going? Have we seen a reduction since the exposure of Savile? And we had a national, what they call VIP defile inquiry, didn't we?
A very inadequate one. And if you think of the attack on any police force that is doing its job, the job of any police force is to fearlessly investigate. And if police are being attacked in the media for investigating known people, in other words, for doing their job, then what is that telling the police? The attacks on Operation Middleton, Operation Conifer, were absolutely appalling. So that just as you now need courage to be an MP with all the attacks that come, to be a senior police officer trying to do good, you're also under attack. So I think that makes it a lot harder. In terms of how much abuse, I think the nature of abuse stays pretty constant, except that it was always larger than we ever thought it was.
I mean, what you're implying here is that we haven't really made any inroads despite all this publicity.
We've made very few inroads. Most of the people I met that wanted me to note allegations about VIPs are now saying they would never go to the police. And this isn't because of the violence in the Met, for example. It's because of the media backing VIPs that have had allegations made against them. To be wrongly accused is horrendous and is an abuse. And one of the awful things that can happen, although the statistics on people naming someone wrongly are experienced at around 2%, very small compared to the number of abusers that are named, but where the Crown Prosecution doesn't think it's got enough evidence, doesn't let it go to court, and if it does go to court, doesn't succeed. It's the amount of abuse victims who are not getting justice is huge.
So look, I mean, you've been around the corner a few times, around the block a few times on this, Valerie. Where do you think people should go if they find, say for example, friends of friends or themselves have been abused and they really want to, you know, do something about it, even if it's just to talk to a professional about it to make sure that somebody knows what went on.
And I think talking to somebody really does matter, but with the knowledge that the person you talk to may be able to get support for you, may be able to help you get to safer housing. But at the moment, the likelihood of a successful prosecution is still very low. I'm still so, very grateful.
So whereabouts would you find somebody to talk to, do you think?
Oh, right. I think most of the voluntary organisations, the one in four organisations, which are run by survivors for survivors, they've been incredibly courageous at knowing where there's been VIP abuse or abuse that feels bizarre or that doesn't seem to fit what is average. I think that the larger clinics and trauma units within the NHS are also much better at recognising this and listening and helping somebody. I think the gap is what's happening with the media and the police. The police, we tend to often wrongly think, are like a branch of social service because they're dealing with what's gone wrong in society, which doesn't usually come from a happy childhood. But the police are an armed service and they're a hierarchic service. And if your boss says, oh, all this rubbish stuff, that's all fantasy, isn't it? A junior officer is not going to have the clout to be able to try and take something forward more. We were very lucky that we had the help of DCI Clive Driscoll, who you may have heard of, who was the person that did more on the Stephen Lawrence case than anyone else, and who the Lawrence family really trusted despite the way the Met otherwise totally let them down. He also solved one of the few honour killing cases in this country, and I had him working with my clinic so that survivors could speak to him. And we knew he was trustworthy, that he would be honest about what his powers were, what would happen, but he would listen and care about being a proper police officer that listens.
But you're going to tell me he's retired now, I bet.
And he's retired as well now, absolutely. So I think we're in the ironic position that therapists and trauma units in the health service, as well as the voluntary sector, know that abuse happens, know that ritual abuse happens, know that organised and VIP abuse happen, but what happens after that is still a huge gap.
Now, Valerie, I know you're also coming out with a novel soon. Do you want to give us a bit of an idea of what's in it and maybe a title if you've got one?
Certainly. It is out. It is actually just out. It's called The Orpheus Project, and it's published by Sphinx Books. And the point of it was to try and educate through a novel, educate people as to what is going on. So the actual narrative is about a young woman with Down syndrome, who is the heroine, who says she's been abused by the deputy prime minister and a rock star. And it's what happens in an ordinary National Health Service unit when somebody says something like that. And it follows her story. She also is from an aristocratic family. And so there are issues around the meaning of the abuse in that context. And it gets into my idea around where some of these perpetrator groups come from. So I'm hoping in turning fact into fiction, the people in it are from my imagination, but what they're doing is from what I know from the people I've met.
One thing we haven't mentioned is the intelligence services and Epstein, because one of the things certainly I'm convinced is that the intelligence services do run some of these abuse rings, the idea being that politicians or people of influence are brought in, they're compromised in these abuse rings, filmed, photographed, etc., and that's used for blackmail. So what do you make of that?
I think that is highly likely that any such group involved with power has got its unorthodox methods. And one of the things that I have been noting with VIP abuse is you can get sex slaves that have been forced to go to parties and smile and look happy. So some poor sod who is behaving badly to women in terms of having an anonymous relationship with anybody without bothering to think about their background. However, some of the men that go to these parties would have no reason to believe it was a sex slave having to have sex with them, that they've been brought up to feel they are their privilege, their wealth, makes them the most coveted person, and like a rock star with fans, they are not yet at this moment questioning who are these women. So some of the tragedy of the women used by Epstein like that is that they weren't looking beaten up, bruised in a way that a decent man, albeit having questionable sexual habits, could think, oh my goodness, what's happened to this woman? So this issue of blackmailing through a traumatized sex slave who knows they have to be smiling and faking it or they'd be damaged, this is carrying on, not just in the UK.
I mean, you know, you just brought up in my mind Prince Andrew, because it may be that he thought that this woman, Virginia Roberts or Gouffray, whatever her name is, I think she was 17 years old when they're alleged to have had a relationship, that he thought that she was just, you know, interested in him because of his power. And I do find the way that he's, you know, this high profile. A lot of people, of course, now just associate Prince Andrew with paedophilia or sexual abuse, and they don't really seem to notice that she was 17. It is that this has been put out there almost as a warning to others that may have been filmed by Epstein and his wife, that this is what's going to happen to you if you don't do as you're told, and that makes the blackmail more effective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Agree with you. I think this is a real silencing, and really, and if that was the situation, really sad he didn't get different advice.